Welcome to Novo Ed Talks, where we reveal real-world strategies and expert insights from learning and development professionals. In every episode, we chat with practitioners, course designers, learning strategists, and business leads. We hear about their experiences in the learning industry and predictions for the profession and the trends that they're seeing. But before we get started, a little bit about Novo Ed. Founded at Stanford's Social Algorithms Lab in 2012, NovoEd is a people-centric, capability-building platform that combines social and collaborative learning to drive performance readiness at scale. Through cohort-based experiences centered around human interaction, NovoEd taps into collective wisdom, placing each learner at the center of perspective, application, and expertise. Large enterprises such as 3M, GE, Marriott International, and Nestle partner with NovoEd to accelerate their critical initiatives, reconnect teams, and achieve rapid alignment through learning that is felt, experienced, and swiftly transformed into impact. Now, let's meet our guest for today's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the NovoEd Talks podcast, a space for training trailblazers to get real. My name is Melissa Fisk. I am the host of the NovoEd Talks podcast, and today I am joined by Anders Forsberg, who is the head of Navistar University. Anders spent more than 15 years in the commercial organization of Swedish heavy vehicle manufacturer Scania before taking the responsibility as head of the global L&D activities in 2018. Scania is part of the Traton Group, together with Volkswagen Truck and Bus, MAN, and Navistar. So from August 2022, Anders got the task to build a corporate university from scratch within the Navistar organization, headquartered in Lisle, Chicago. Today, Navistar University serves the 15,000 employees with new skills needed to transform the diesel heavy truck and bus business to a company that drives the shift to a sustainable transportation system. Wow. No light task at that. Welcome, Anders. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself, your role, and your company, just expanding on that impressive bio I just shared.
Yeah, well, it's a long introduction. I think you covered a lot of it. So yeah, the accent is Swedish. I moved here to Chicago area about 2 years ago with the task of building a corporate university for Navistar. So our brands are international trucks. So we do trucks. We do also IC school buses. So we have actually a big market share of all the famous US school buses you see out there. And the company and the industry is in a huge shift. I'm sure we'll touch back on that when it comes to learning. But this electrification journey is, of course, also hitting the heavy vehicles, not only the personal cars that we are driving. So that's a task we're taking on, and to really lead that shift and to help to drive that shift. So a lot of stuff going on, for sure.
That's amazing and something you should be so proud of. Who are your learners and what are some of their biggest challenges?
I think that's also a challenge for us, that we have a diverse group of learners. As with any big company, we have the corporate functions with the finance and people and culture organization, which we belong to actually. Big group out in manufacturing sites around the US, but also in Mexico. So we have languages when it comes to the US and Mexico, and we have different target groups when it comes to the corporate people, if I can say so, and also the production line. So diverse target groups to serve, for sure.
Absolutely. And what are some of your biggest L&D challenges for implementing learning and development programs for these diverse groups of folks? And how are you approaching some of those challenges?
Well, that's a $10 million question here. where we are, as you said in the introduction, we're still quite a young organization here when it comes to a learning organization, to be honest. So we still have some platforms and some basics to build those routines into the organization and the habit of really go on learning all the time. So that is something we're really working with, the learning culture. But then, of course, also myself as a Sitting in the world headquarters here, I can choose when I work, and I have my own computer in front of me. Of course, when I'm if I would work out on the production line, it's totally different prerequisites of when they are able to learn and what format they can take in. So we just have to work the whole palette here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is such a hard thing to kind of shift perspective-wise for those of us who are here at a computer and like, oh, we have 15 minutes in between meetings. We can watch this little webinar or do something. It's like not everyone has the access to that. So how do you adapt for the folks that do and don't?
Yeah, exactly.
With the rise of remote work and virtual collaboration, kind of along those lines, how has your approach to learning and development adapted to ensure that employees are equipped with the necessary skills for the digital workplace? Or, for maybe not the digital workplace in your situation, but with everyone else in the digital workplace?
I think that's a valid point. So that's something definitely that I am fighting to make people realize that not everyone is in the digital workplace. So that's a big point. Otherwise, for us, I think maybe I'm calling this an early victory, but I think that during the corona years, I mean, we all learned at least at some level to use the Teams and the Zooms and these type of meetings, of course. So I would actually like to turn it a little bit and say that at this moment, I think the excitement of bringing everything into a digital format is sort of past. I think now we just have to be conscious what we sort out and what serves best to put in a digital format, and what actually is best to have as a physical experience to bring people in to have that human meeting again. That also comes to the tools. Like I try to drive that we use things that really work. Let's not get excited and bring in a new tool every 6 months, because there are a lot of providers in this space that come up with really cool stuff. But if it took us a couple of years to learn how to use Teams, then it is tough. Let's not make that a barrier to bring in too fast too many new tools.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's almost a whole new set of challenges entering this digital workplace where it's like, yes, there's a bunch of tools out there, but just because they're there and you can use them doesn't mean that you necessarily should use them.
Yeah.
How does your team identify and address skills gaps within the organization?
Well, we try to work with a little bit of a distributed model where we call ourselves the university as the central function. We want to work with what we call academies out in the organization, meaning we have a commercial academy, a technical training academy, and so forth. So where we feel the strongest responsibility is to bring in basically the company-wide competencies. So again, driving into electrification now, digitalization, driving the sustainability questions of how can we be more sustainable as a company. I mean, this does not only entail the electrification of the vehicles, it's much more into that. So that's where we take the responsibility to be close to the company management, company leadership, to see where are we heading. And then we would lean on the local academies, the functional academies, to be more specific. Okay, so in research and development, what are the new technologies? What are the tools that they are using that they need to train on? So the demands and needs, they are coming from both directions in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is always a tricky question. How do you currently measure the effectiveness of your L&D programs, and what are your core KPIs, if you have any?
It's very very simple. No, that's why you're asking me. I'm sure you're asking everyone. It's tricky. Again, I will defend myself a little bit here and say that we're still quite young. The organization is not used to have a very systemized way of measuring the benefits. So of course we do the basics and measure participation and so on, and then we do per program more individualized follow-up and say, okay, so this specific delivery, did people actually work faster, or did we cut the costs because they can work more efficient? And we have one or two of those very simple examples of how to run our purchasing process, for example, where we trained a number of people and we realize now we have less mistakes and it goes faster, which can actually be measured in dollars. So we do some of those. But we also work a lot with the leadership development and the culture in the company. And to be honest, I try to not push that discussion in the direction of ROI because it's very hard. Nobody knows. Of course, I could give a number, but it's very hard to make that calculation. So the most important thing for me there is to just be in tight dialogue with the CEO and the executive leadership team and say and make sure that they believe that it is worth it. Because of course, that's the core question. It's not the dollar question. It's the are we having the support from the executive team here? And at the moment, you see me smile because I think we do. So that's nice.
Absolutely. Could you expand upon that a little bit? Like, do you have a specific kind of case study or example of one of these initiatives that, you did mention the how to run your purchasing program or what you mentioned at the beginning there, but do you have an example, that you could talk a little bit more about that's, very clearly impacted employee performance and contributed to the overall success of the organization?
I think another set of programs that we're very proud of here is our change management programs. Again, hard to put a specific dollar value on, but our evaluations showing when we ask the organizations, are you working in a more conscious way? Have you use the tools in your daily work? Has it helped your organization to create results? We get a clear yes. And let me just expand a little bit on what maybe those change programs are. So we have we realized early that there is a big change. The company Navistar, again, is a relatively new member of the Volkswagen family. So we brought in some people from the Swedish sister company to help support. So that is one big change in this company. Another change, again, is the technology shift that we are in. So basically, a lot of changes, as it is probably in all the businesses. On top of that, the journey that everyone is in with artificial intelligence and all of that. So anyway, change management, big topic identified. We created a journey for change management for leaders to be aware of what is needed to take someone and take an organization through a change journey. And at the same time, we also launched a program for change practitioners to be a more hands-on support for leaders when it comes to communication tools, stakeholder analysis tools, and so on. That combo proved super successful. And again, it's not always about being able to set the dollar sign on it. I think the proof comes when the leadership comes back to us and they say, this really helped us solve our challenges. And those are the words I want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge part of it and a huge important part of it. So that's great. And I think a lot of organizations go through that, like major change management, and don't necessarily come out on the better end of it, So I think
It's
that's
hard.
a huge success. We've touched on technology a little bit, but do you want to get into any kind of like details on what role technology plays in your L&D programs? And how do you leverage different tools and platforms?
Maybe to not be so straight into like our technology landscape, but I think one reflection that I am having at the moment where I'm pausing my management team to reflect is that, again, the access to technology, the access to generative AI is so big now. Everyone has it. So to find information and knowledge is not going to be an issue, really. There are so many tools that can do that. So in my head, we have to figure out how do we not lean on the technology, maybe, and the technological platforms, but how do we work to strengthen the human sides that AI so far maybe cannot answer up to? Like, how do you build on your experience to take the right decisions? What is wisdom, essentially, and how can we help? How can we help on that side? Because I think that's the side where we can add more value in the future, to be honest. So maybe I didn't answer your question straight, but that's obviously what's in my head at the moment.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. This is very conversational, and like we love to hear, what folks are doing and all of that. So,
Yeah.
what's relevant and true to you, is important to me here. So, thinking about just the kind of L&D space in general, looking back over the past 5 years, what are some key takeaways that you've seen with L&D programs?
Ooh. Yeah, I think it's again, the whole landscape is changing and it's easy for us within the L&D profession to say, oh, the L&D profession is changing so fast because of all these new tools and technologies. But I think the whole world is moving much faster. So one aspect I think is we have to consider, do we work with setting up our training portfolio to be something that we, repeat and put on a poster board and say, this is the portfolio we're running in this program? Or do we also have to shift and say, well, we're doing more one-offs or focused projects and saying, well, these 6 months, this is what the organization should learn. And the next 6 months, it's something else. So I think we, in that sense, have to learn to be much more agile and just move ahead in the L&D function also, not cling on to our old programs or safe harbors in that sense.
Absolutely.
But also when it comes to speed, I think, again, back to our Corona times, which is still popular to refer to, I think we saw a lot of e-learning solutions and digitalization moves that were not super successful, and I think it took us a couple of years to come back to more better e-learnings, basically, and digital learnings. I think we will see the same journey now when everyone is saying, yeah, we used artificial intelligence and therefore it's super.
Yeah.
I think we will see some good and some bad solutions come up here, and we already do see that. But I think this journey is going to be much quicker. We're going to sort this out within a year or so and not just blindly put AI generated, this must be good, on top of everything we produce. So some observations.
No, absolutely. I think that's incredibly insightful. Especially just with, there's so many layers to that humans are going through because of what happened through the pandemic. We learned that we now understand that we can't just like adapt a whole new set of technologies or things and have it be perfect, that there has to be iterations of it and adaptations to it. So I think that if anything, that's kind of like a subconscious thing we all learned and are now applying to things as we move forward, which is great. As the workplace continues to evolve, how do you see the future of L&D? We've kind of touched on that, but do you see any kind of like trends or emerging technologies coming about?
Again, I think we touched on the actual technologies. It's a lot happening. So I don't think that the toolbox is basically not going to be a challenge. We will have so many technologies supporting us and the tools. But what I really want to flag for here is the closeness with business. I mean, this so sounds also like a classical question, but where I want us to move is sit close and tight with the business, with the actual activities that the company is working on. I think we have a tendency to, within the L&D world, to get very excited, which is nice, and we love to learn. So we bring on new tools and we say, oh, this is awesome. Why doesn't our surroundings understand that this tool is beautiful and the instructional design is perfect and so on? But being out there and you talk to the business leaders and they say, I don't care. I want Pete here to do something different tomorrow. And if that's with your old tool or new tool, I don't care. But let's stay close to all the business areas in those dialogues. What is it that they want to see happening a little bit differently tomorrow? And that's what I think we should focus on, and not on our own technology platforms and tools.
Absolutely. I love that. As our last question, as a fun little send off, what advice would you give to those just stepping into a leadership role?
Congratulations, you just took the step. It is sometimes before I answer the actual question, I think this is a classic actually. A lot of people would like to become a leader or a manager, and they realize what has been happening behind the curtain when they get that seat. Then they have a lot of administration on top, and they have to sometimes deal with personal issues that are quite tricky because you have to take care of the whole person. And maybe that's my first advice. Don't see people just as a workplace production tool, but look at the whole human. That's really something that I live by. And something else I think is you have to be open with your, I'm not saying weakness maybe, but your that this is your first job as a manager. You will be trying your best, but be very open. Don't try to always be the one that takes the decisions, but ask the surroundings, ask your team, what do you think? And also on your side, be a human. That's my core tip.
I love that. That's great advice and important advice, especially being in a leadership role. Anders, thank you so much for your time today. It has been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode.